Neo Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, rural hospitals across New York are bracing for impact after the passage of President Trump's so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. With major changes to Medicaid coverage and funding, more than half the state's rural hospitals could be pushed to the brink. We speak with Garnet Health CEO Jerry Dunleavy about what's at stake for healthcare across the region. A former Boy Scout abused at a Sullivan County camp has been awarded $30 million in damages. We'll hear from reporter Isabel Braverman of the Sullivan County Democrat about what happened and why this case marks a legal milestone. We talk with the Pike County Area on Aging about what to expect at the 11th Annual Elder Justice Day, and laughter, latkes, and legacy. The Borscht Belt Festival returns to Ellenville this weekend. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Investors around the world are cheering President Trump's announced trade deal with Japan. As NPR's Maria Aspen reports, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is now up 170 points.
President Trump, posting on social media, wrote the United States will impose taxes of 15% on Japanese imports. While those new tariffs will increase costs, they're lower than the 25% tariffs Trump had previously threatened on Japanese goods. Trump also said Japan will invest $550 billion in the United States. Global investors cheered the news of the trade deal, with Japan's Nikkei rising 3.5%. In the U.S., investors have been largely shrugging off the ongoing tariffs drama, even as General Motors and other big companies warn about the impacts on their operations. The S&P 500 index, which tracks the largest U.S. companies, has repeatedly hit record highs. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
A sentencing hearing opens today for the man convicted of killing four University of Idaho students in 2022. Brian Koberger is expected to be sentenced to four life terms without the possibility of parole. For Northwest Public Broadcasting, Lauren Patterson has more.
Koberger pleaded guilty to the murders of students Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonzalez, Zana Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin at a change of plea hearing earlier this month. He admitted to the stabbing deaths in exchange for prosecutors dropping the death penalty. Family members of the victims are sharing statements on how the crime has affected them. Koberger also has a chance to speak at the hearing. Despite pleading guilty to the killings, Koberger has not shared the motive for the crime. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Patterson in Boise.
House Speaker Mike Johnson has adjourned his chamber early for summer recess. The move pauses an effort to vote on a bill demanding the release of more documents in the case of late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Johnson says the Justice Department is already trying to do this. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche says he has contacted lawyers for Epstein's former girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, for a possible interview. Maxwell is imprisoned for sex trafficking crimes. Former federal prosecutor Mitchell Epner says the Justice Department's actions in this case are extraordinary.
It's unusual that the DOJ would publicly announce that they are speaking to a potential cooperator, and it is extraordinarily unusual that somebody as senior as the Deputy Attorney General would be the person conducting those conversations. In over 30 years as a criminal defense attorney and my time as a federal prosecutor, I've never seen anything like this.
He spoke to NPR's All Things Considered. On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 176 points. The Nasdaq is down 8. This is NPR. Los Angeles officials have charged the driver of a car who was accused of plowing into a crowd of pedestrians last weekend. Fernando Ramirez faces dozens of counts of attempted murder. Prosecutors say he intentionally drove into the crowd outside an L.A. area nightclub. He was pulled from his car and beaten and then shot by another person. Authorities are still looking for that suspect. Elon Musk's artificial intelligence company is trying to raise billions of dollars. NPR's Bobby Allen reports the company is struggling with enormous energy costs.
AI chatbots require an immense amount of power to operate. The massive data collection, the water-guzzling data centers. Most tech firms like OpenAI partner with big cloud computing companies to absorb some of the cost. But Musk is building and maintaining his own AI infrastructure. One recent estimate first reported by the Wall Street Journal found that xAI is burning $13 billion a year just to stay afloat. Musk is now trying to raise billions of dollars from investors as the AI race continues to heat up. He's also grappling with reputational issues following his Grok chatbot launching into anti-Semitic tirades. Musk said recently he's developing a kid-friendly version called Baby Grok. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
NASA scrubbed a launch yesterday of a SpaceX rocket. It was supposed to take off from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, but seconds before liftoff, the launch was called off. Managers say a regional power outage in the Santa Barbara region disrupted telecommunications that affected air traffic into the Pacific Ocean. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics, presenting Oh Hi, a new comedy directed by Sophie Brooks starring Molly Gordon and Logan Lerman about a young couple whose romantic weekend slowly begins to unravel. Starts Friday in theaters.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Earlier this month, President Trump signed into law a mega bill which includes major changes to who's covered by Medicaid and how Medicaid is funded. State lawmakers have warned that as many as 1.5 million New Yorkers could lose access to health care when the law takes effect. For rural hospitals, these cuts could be a make-or-break moment. More than half of New York's rural hospitals were already facing headwinds before the big bill passed, including Garnet Health. Garnet Health serves nearly 500,000 patients in Orange County, Sullivan County, and its surrounding areas. On the phone with me now is Jerry Dunleavy, CEO of Garnet Health Medical Center Catskills, where he's responsible for daily operations, oversight, and clinical support services of Garnet Health's two Sullivan County campuses located in Harris and Calicoon. Mr. Dunleavy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate the opportunity. It's good to speak with you.
What is Garnet Health anticipating to be the most immediate impact on the system now that this so-called big, beautiful bill has been signed into law?
Well, you know, on a high level, what this bill does is it shifts a significant amount of the funding responsibility from the federal government to the state government with regard to the Medicaid program. And the concern that we have, and I think that is shared by others that sit in a similar position to me, is that the state is not going to be able to make up that difference. So they won't be able to cover the full cost of the Medicaid program. And that's going to cause significant challenges for our health systems, but particularly our rural hospitals. So, you know, we've been monitoring this bill since it was first introduced. We engaged in state advocacy efforts, spent time up in Albany, spent time in Washington. But unfortunately, we were not able to impact much change in what came out once the bill was signed into law. The reason why this is important for Sullivan County is about 35-40% of the patients that we serve are on Medicaid. An additional 35 or 40% because of our aging population is on Medicare. So that leaves 20%, and that 20% is sometimes self-pay, sometimes it's charity care, and there's a small amount of commercial insurance. But that payer mix is a recipe for, you know, barely being able to break even. And if you start to cut programs that fund the organization, it's going to be significant. You know, it's also important to note, you know, although the bill has been going through Congress for some time, the specifics really are still under review. So I think it's going to be a couple of weeks before we know the true financial impact. You know, as you mentioned in your introductory statement, about 1.5 million people in New York State are going to be impacted. And if you look at some of the information that's available by congressional district, I think for our district, they talk about 35,000 to 40,000 people could potentially lose their coverage. And a percentage of those are in Sullivan County.
And given that some of the details of this bill are not completely clear, as you mentioned, what are some of the biggest challenges to New York's rural hospitals from your perspective then? Is it that amount of folks who rely on Medicaid? And then how will this law impact those challenges? Again, with the backdrop of knowing not all the complete details yet.
Yeah, so most rural communities, and Sullivan County being one of them, as I mentioned, they have older populations, lower income population that is heavily dependent upon the Medicaid program. And although we don't know the specifics, we know that the Medicaid cuts are going to leave many people without insurance. There's also, you know, reduction of state appropriations for rural hospitals that really will further impact our financial performance. You know, we're concerned that this is going to force us to make decisions on services that we provide and which services can we not sustain. And that's a terrible position to be in. You know, there's going to become this ripple effect, you know, where the loss of insurance, it's going to lead to those uninsured patients showing up in our emergency department, leaving, you know, providers and hospitals to cover that cost of care. So, you know, it's important to remember that hospitals do not and legally cannot turn anyone away who needs care. But at the same time, those hospitals really cannot support a growing volume of unreimbursed visits. So, you know, we'll see this impact more so in 2026 than in this year, but we know that it's coming.
What have you heard from your patients and employees about how they're feeling right now in this period of uncertainty?
Well, actually, just this past Friday, I had an anniversary lunch, and this is a great opportunity where I'm able to hear from staff about, you know, what are their concerns. I talk with them about what's happening in the organization, and, you know, what we're doing in the community. But when they had the opportunity to ask questions, it was heavily focused on the Medicaid cuts. And it's clearly top of mind. You know, we're very unique in Sullivan County. And I think rural organizations are unique in this way. We have an incredible connection, between our staff and our community. Many of our staff have been with the organization their entire career. We celebrated people that were with us for 1 year and up to 40 years during this luncheon. And, you know, they've seen a lot of financial turbulence over the years. I mean, healthcare is, you know, accustomed to change. I think we did a fantastic job of working our way through the pandemic. And, you know, staff understand that we work on a lean budget, and we've always managed our way through. And it's a combination of, you know, being very frugal. It's assistance from the state. It's enhanced Medicaid payments and some grants. That's what helps us as a rural hospital get through our operations. But, you know, the concern over the Medicaid cuts is just, you know, really, frankly, feels like the straw that broke the camel's back, and we're concerned about that. Mm-hmm. Our staff understand our community. They understand how many patients rely upon Medicaid, and they also understand the vulnerability of that population. They're oftentimes presenting with some significant medical complexity. So, as a staff, as a group of people that are highly, highly committed to our community, they're certainly concerned. With regard to patients, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've been watching this because of what I do for work. I've been watching this every day as it evolves. But I can't say that I've heard a lot from patients, and I don't spend all my time in my office. I'm out on the patient floors talking with staff, talking with patients in their rooms, and also in the community. So the feedback from those folks hasn't been significant. I do think this is going to change as we get closer to 2026, and there's more of an understanding of what the impact is going to be. And, you know, if we have to make any changes in our service offerings, that certainly will catch the attention of our community.
And I mentioned as well that before this bill passed, rural hospitals, including Guardant Health, were facing some headwinds. Last month, the system announced some job cuts and restructuring moves, citing some tough choices brought in part by previous federal cuts. Now that this has passed, is there any risk of closure for any of the Guardant Health locations? Is that something you're concerned about? It's certainly something that seems to pop up in the community anytime something like this happens.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a health system that has a significant percentage of Medicaid patients that can't say they're concerned about having to look at service offerings. So, you know, the Medicaid cuts were most likely going to happen before those decisions were made. But, you know, we saw decrease in the Medicare program. I believe there's a 2% increase is what we're slated for next year. We've seen reductions in the physician fee schedule. So what our employed doctors are paid for the care that they provide. And, you know, the two programs that were closed, specifically pulmonary rehab and diabetes, are two programs that I had direct oversight for many, many years in my career, and they deliver an excellent service, an important service. But the unfortunate consequence is that when programs can't support the cost of their operations, it presents hospital leaders with very, very difficult decisions. So, you know, there over years, you in a hospital, you will make you make money in some areas and you lose money in other areas. And hopefully, you know, at the end of the day, you come out even. But these federal cuts are going to make it more and more difficult to come out even.
How are you and the Guardant Health leadership team preparing to weather this storm?
As I said, we've been monitoring this all along. We normally have a strategic planning cycle that was set to start in mid-2026. We have decided as a leadership team that it's time for us to get together and start to talk about what are the strategic initiatives that we need to pursue in order to make our organization sustainable and in order to preserve as many of the services as we can that we currently provide. So I think that strategic planning effort will help create a vision and goals that will help us do the best we can to weather this storm.
And anything else you'd like folks to know who are listening, who rely on Guardant Health, what to expect and you know, what you'd like to say to them as we go here?
Yeah, you know, we recognize and we value the concern and advocacy that our community shows, and also our staff when changes occur in the hospital. And I frankly, I think that's a testament to how much this institution means to our community. But I think it's important for everyone to understand the financial realities that impact healthcare today. You know, these realities, they're not always visible to the public, but they're very real, and they have a profound impact on the care that we provide. I think what I would want our community to know is we are committed, and I'll speak specifically to Sullivan County. We are committed to Sullivan County. We will do everything we can to work our way through. You know, these are unprecedented times. If you think about the past 5 years, 5 years ago, we were in the middle of a pandemic. We spent the years after trying to kind of regroup and go through some financial recovery. And now here we are facing billions of dollars of cuts to the Medicaid program. So it's a challenge, but we are committed to doing everything that we can to continue to serve the community.
Jerry Dunleavy is the CEO of Guardant Health Medical Center Catskills. He's responsible for the daily operations, oversight, and clinical support services of Guardant Health's two Sullivan County campuses located in Harris and Calicoon. More information at garnethealth.org. We should also note Garnet Health is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. Mr. Dunleavy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, nearly 40 years later, Jeff Pringle gets justice. Isabel Braverman of the Sullivan County Democrat joins us to explain the landmark $30 million verdict and what it means for survivors of childhood abuse. This is Radio Catskill.
On the next Radio Lab,
these are like swimming fossils.
Could one of the oldest and scariest species on our planet,
sharks are crazy, yeah,
help cure some of our worst diseases?
It blows your mind. It really does.
These animals that we don't even want to share the water with because we're afraid that they'll harm us could actually save us.
Wait, what?
It's amazing, actually.
That's on the next Radio Lab. This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
For the next Jazz Night in America, we're in Rhode Island for an unforgettable lineup of music from the Newport Jazz Festival through the years, handpicked and hosted by me, Christian McBride. Tune in to check out rare sets from Clifford Brown with Max Roach, Dave Brubeck, and Horace Silver. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A New York State Supreme Court judge awarded $30 million in damages to Jeff Pringle, a man who says he was sexually abused as a teenager at the Forestburg Scout Reservation back in 1985. The verdict is believed to be the first under New York's Child Victims Act in Sullivan County, and it sheds light on decades-old abuse at the institutions who may have enabled it. Joining us now is Isabel Braverman, the editor with the Sullivan County Democrat, who's been covering the case. Isabel, thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about Jeff Pringle and what happened to him at the Forestburg Scout Reservation in 1985.
Sure. So he was working as a camp counselor there. He was 16 years old at the time, and during that summer at the camp, there was a man there who had presented himself as a doctor, both to the camp staff and to, you know, campers and people there. People believed that he was a doctor. So Jeff Pringle had an ear infection from swimming in the lake. He went to the infirmary and was seen by this man, you know, posing as a doctor. The man held him at the infirmary, and unfortunately, you know, he sexually abused him while he was there, and again the following night.
What do we know about how Calaud, did I say his last name correctly, Calaud? Calaud?
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce
Paul
it.
Paul Calaud, how did he gain access to campers and present himself as a doctor at the camp? Do we know how long he was there doing that at the camp?
So it was only for that summer, I believe, and the court documents regarding this case don't lay out exactly how he gained entrance to the camp. He apparently was volunteering there for the summer. He is actually from Florida. So, you know, during his time there as a volunteer, he presented himself as a doctor. According to the court documents, he had things like, you know, a briefcase that had an emblem on it, like signifying that he was a doctor. He had some other medical equipment that he brought with him that police later confiscated. So, you know, it's not exactly clear how he presented himself to the camp, and they're not named as a defendant in the lawsuit.
And Jeff Pringle's mother came to suspect something was wrong. She took steps to you know, bring this to the attention of folks. What are the steps that she took, and then that led to Calaud's conviction back in the 1980s?
Right. So his mother was a nurse, and so he told her about what happened, although he did not tell her about the sexual abuse that occurred. He just told her what, you know, medical treatment, quote unquote, he did to him. And his mom just thought that something wasn't right. And so she started talking to Mr. Kalod and another nurse who was on staff at the camp. And through that, she discovered that he did not actually have a medical license. And that led to him, you know, being investigated by the police at the time in 1985.
And so fast forward, the state courts awarded Pringle $30 million. What was the reasoning behind such a large award?
Right. So the reasoning that they laid out in court documents included how Mr. Pringle has suffered years of, mental health issues, from anxiety to depression to suicidal ideation. And based on that and him coming forward at this time, they felt that that number was what he deserved.
And the judge cited credible proof of abuse against other individuals. Does the court record say anything about those other cases?
It does not. It does not quite go into detail about that. It says that there were probably other, I think they said, four others, including Mr. Pringle, that, offenses happened against them.
And you mentioned that the camp was not mentioned in the case. Was the Boy Scouts organization itself named in this case, or I guess there was also a bankruptcy proceeding?
Right. So they were not named as a defendant in the case. However, according to the law firm that represented Mr. Pringle, he is also pursuing claims against the Boy Scouts of America in their Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings for the law firm says for enabling Kylod's access to young campers.
And as we mentioned in the introduction, it's believed to be the first Child Victims Act verdict in Sullivan County. Why is that important?
Yeah, so the Child Victims Act was passed in 2019, so 5 years ago. And it opened a window for victims and survivors of childhood sexual assault to pursue claims. So it extended the statute of limitations. Previously, once you turned 22, you cannot pursue claims anymore if you were sexually abused as a child. So it's really a historic act that they passed. And I believe there are cases from all over New York State going through the courts relating to this. But this is, the first one that we know of in Sullivan County.
Do we know if this case with Mr. Pringle has prompted other survivors in the area to consider coming forward, specific to this fake doctor at the camp, or any indication that other lawsuits or investigations could be reopened?
I'm not sure. I did reach out to the Public Information Office for the State Supreme Court, and I haven't heard back from them yet on that.
And we mentioned this bankruptcy proceeding involving the Boy Scouts of America. What are the next steps for Jeff Pringle?
That I'm also not sure. It's, something to follow up on.
All right, that's Isabel Braverman, editor of the Sullivan County Democrat, breaking down the recent $30 million court ruling in the Forestburg Boy Scout abuse case and what it can mean going forward. You can read her full story at scdemocratonline.com. Isabel, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Friday marks the 11th annual Elder Justice Day in Pike County. We'll learn more after this. It's Radio Chatskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we're going to hear the exotic percussion of Martin Denny, plus one of the great bongo records, Jazz Heat Bongo Beat. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Why not join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred? The Retro Cocktail Hour. Coming up tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Congress has approved a White House request to eliminate federal funding for public media. NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and enriching everyday life. But without federal funding, we are relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This Friday, it's the 11th annual Elder Justice Day, hosted by the Pike County Area Agency on Aging. It's a day dedicated to educating, empowering, and protecting our older community members, addressing a silent crisis that affects 1 in 10 older adults, elder abuse. Joining us now is Tracy Simon, Protective Care Manager and a key organizer of the event. Tracy, thanks for being with us. Oops, we may have lost Tracy. Hold on a second. We'll take a quick break and get her back. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's all about summertime hosting and guesting in delicious style. From brilliant, simple sides and desserts you can bring to your next party to a lifestyle expert's tips on hosting, that's all coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
I'm Catherine Marr, CEO of NPR. At the White House's request, Congress just voted to eliminate all federal funding for public media. This decision by Congress hurts communities across the country. It means fewer voices that dare to ask difficult questions or reflect on the full richness of who we are as a nation. Fewer stories about what connects us and brings us closer together. And for millions, especially those in rural areas, it means losing access to trusted local news, emergency alerts, and the everyday connection and companionship that public media provides. But here's what will never change. Our commitment to you. NPR and public media exist to serve the American public, to bring you rigorous journalism without fear or favor, to connect communities in moments of both crisis and joy. Public media has always been powered by the people it serves, people like you and me, who believe in a free and independent press. So I'm asking you to act now. Your donation will make an immediate difference. You will ensure public media remains free and accessible to all. You will enable this essential American service to survive and thrive. Please go to this station's website and give what you can. We are here because of you, to serve you, and with your help, we always will be.
Radio Catskill needs you now more than ever. Please stand with us. Keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, I think we've gotten the phone gremlins under control here. Tracy Simon, Protective Care Manager at Pike County Area Agency on Agency, is with us now. Tracy, good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
And we were talking about Elder Justice Day. I want to ask you a little bit more about the events happening that day. But in the introduction earlier, I mentioned that 1 in 10 older adults are affected by elder abuse. Can you help folks understand what that looks like and why it so often goes unnoticed?
Right. So when we talk about abuse, it could be in the form of self-neglect. It could be in the form of caretaker neglect, as well as exploitation. It could be abandonment. So in that realm, the numbers be higher. So anybody can call our office and report concerns for any of those forms of abuse or neglect of a senior, and we go out and investigate. And then we make sure that they're safe. If they're not, we're offering services to ensure that they're safe. And that could be not only in the community, but also in facilities. So your nursing home, personal care homes, assisted livings. We also protect those seniors as well.
Are there particular warning signs that family members or neighbors should be looking for? And what is the most important thing someone should do if they suspect elder abuse?
Sure. So we tell people, look at things that are changing. We do training where we've trained local pastors and clergy and EMS to recognize the signs of abuse or exploitation. So if somebody is coming to church and they're always well-kept and they're giving to the donation plate, and they attend functions, and they start not coming to church. They're not, you know, participating in stuff. Ask yourself why. You know, somebody's saying, hey, I got to go get gift cards at Walmart. You know, somebody wants an investment, and I'm going to get gift cards. That's where the signs start. You know, it's the people in our community. It's the medical professionals. It's the EMS. You know, you're going to a house 5-6 times because somebody fell. There's something wrong. You know, so we encourage people, call our office, our main number, the 570-775-5550. We have a dedicated protective service unit with intake workers, investigators, supervisors, or you can call the abuse hotline number if for the state, if you're not in the state. So if you're in Idaho and you know a family relative members you feel being abused, I don't care if you're in Idaho, if they're in Pike County, we're going to look into it. So there is a 1-800 number, and that is 1-800-490-8505.
So Friday is the 11th annual Elder Justice Day, a day that the Area Agency on Agency has put together to educate folks, empower folks. What have you seen since it's been established? How's it grown and changed since it began?
So it began as just a little event. It is now a huge event in Pike County where we get guest speakers. We make sure that, you know, they get a lovely breakfast. They are getting a hot lunch. Vendors are here from different types of resources throughout the county for them. So they get education from that. This year, we're focusing on mental health and the crisis behind mental health and the services that are out there, not only for regular individuals, but for our veterans. There's about 4,000 veterans in Pike County, and we're only servicing 1,400 through the VA services. And these people, there's services for everybody. So it's about, you know, what is mental health? What does it look like when you're in crisis? Where can you go to get help? You know, people aren't alone, and I think that's what they need to know. We're here for them. You know, that's why we have actually 5 senior centers now in Pike County, and there's events going on all the time for these people. You know, some of it happened through social isolation through COVID, and people haven't recovered from that. They're still not getting back out. So we are, you know, amping up our senior centers. We're offering more stuff for people, 60 to 100. Everybody is welcome. So every month there's something going on for our seniors, whether it's picnics. You know, it's not just Elder Justice Day. There's golf, mini golf outings. There's painting classes. There's ukulele lessons, different type of themed events throughout the year. So we encourage people, other than this Friday, to come out and get involved with the senior center. There's volunteer things that people can do, volunteer to be a driver, volunteer to work in the center. So there's opportunities for everybody, 60 and over, to be a part of our senior centers and help our seniors.
Can you talk about the drug take back program and why that's part of the day?
Sure. So our local sheriff's department does a drug take back for us. And we encourage seniors who have medication they don't take anymore, whether it's prescription, over-the-counter, you know, a narcotic tier 3, so a pain medication, to bring it in here and drop it off in the bucket. It shouldn't be flushed. It shouldn't go down the sink and be dissolved. But that medication could also lead to concerns. Somebody else in the home could be using the medication. It could be cause somebody to overdose. So it's a program we offer. We also have the drug and alcohol here, and they have actually packets you can take home to safely dissolve medication. So we offer two ways for our seniors to discard unused medications.
And beyond the presentations, and there are a range of community partners. You mentioned the sheriff's office. What other kind of organizations will be there and other services?
Sure.
That people
so there
can
will be, yep, there's about 20 vendors this year. That range from, we have our ADRC link of Wayne, Pike, and Monroe County. The Attorney General Office will be here. We have two of our local senior living places and skilled nursing facilities going to be here. Karen and Quinlan Home Health and Hospice will be here. Residential Home Health and Hospice will be here. Our district attorney is here. Our sheriff's department, the workforce. So if there's a senior who wants to get back into the workforce, they will be here. Our Pike County public safety, 911, they'll be here, as well as our office. So there's something for everybody. Our share housing program is going to be here. The Dime Bank is going to be here. Serving Seniors is going to be here. They offer rep payee services for people who maybe can't manage their bills. So Representative Jeff Ulsmer's office will be here. So there's hopefully something for every one of the people that attend. And all of these services and these providers are available even without our agency. So people can call them privately if they want to discuss something as well.
And where can folks get more information, including information about transportation?
Sure. So our Pike County Transportation is separate from our office. So if you call the main number for transportation, they could get transportation throughout Pike County if they need to come to our senior centers. They need to go to a doctor's office. Transportation has a schedule, so seniors don't have to be homebound, but they can get to every five of our senior centers through our Pike County Transportation.
And what message do you have for the broader community about protecting and valuing our older neighbors?
If they think something is off, the simplest thing, they don't have to prove it. If they suspect it, they surmise it, they're concerned, call the office. We have, you know, trained individuals here, different departments here, and that one person may not qualify for one thing, but they might qualify for another program. So we do have person-centered counseling here. We do farmer market vouchers. We have our protective service department. We have our options program that can assist people who qualify if they need personal care, bathing, dressing, grooming assistance. We offer home-delivered meals for those who qualify. So if we don't have it here, we have workers who will find it for you out in the community.
And are you still looking for folks to register for the event, or is it just open to folks if they show up?
So it would be registration. They could call. Cutoff is today for registration because we are limited. But we do this every single year. So we, you know, if somebody didn't get to come this year, you know, we encourage them to come next year and we'll advertise again for next year. But we usually hold it within July or August.
That's Tracy Simon, Protective Care Manager of the Pike County Area Agency on Aging, talking to us about the 11th Annual Elder Justice Day. That's taking place Friday from 10 to 2 at the Blooming Grove Senior Center in Lords Valley. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tim. Have a good day.
You too. And bye-bye. If you suspect elder abuse, you can report it 24/7 by calling 1-800-490-8505. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Borscht Belt Festival is back this weekend with comedy, culture, and klezmer in the Catskills. We'll talk with Andrew Jacobs of the Borscht Belt Museum about what makes this festival one of a kind and why the Borscht Belt still matters. This is Radio Catskill.
This week on This American Life, Josh visits the mean girl he knew in elementary school, and she's still mean.
They look right at you and say, I know you're garbage. You know you're garbage. Why pretend? And you're going to come over to my house, which is the biggest house I've ever seen in my life. And you're going to say, you see this garbage? This is what a real man provides for me.
Some people never get over it. The allure of the mean friend.
You know, you come here and you tape me for your stupid friend's radio show, and then you get the hell out.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, it's Catherine Marr, CEO of NPR. Federal funding for public media has been eliminated. That means that the NPR network is moving forward in an uncharted future. But our commitment to you will never waver. Please give today to support the kind of journalism that democracy relies upon. Here's how to make your gift to this station, and thank you.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, this weekend, it's Laughter, Latkes, and Legacy, the return of the Borscht Belt Festival, the one-of-a-kind celebration of comedy, culture, and nostalgia. Joining us now is Andrew Jacobs of the Borscht Belt Museum, the organization behind it all. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Good. It's always fun to talk about the Borscht Belt Festival and all the great stuff you guys are doing at the museum. But I wanted just to, for folks who, you know, hear us say the term Borscht Belt a lot, how do you explain what it means and why it's so important to preserve and celebrate?
Well, Borscht Belt refers to this, what we call the Catskills Resort era from, you know, the early 1900s till about 1980s, when you had more than 1,000 hotels and resorts and bungalow colonies all along all around the Catskills. A million people every summer would migrate up to the castle from the city. And there was a huge flowering of entertainment and culture that happened at these hotels, comedians especially. That's where stand-up comedy kind of was born. And all the greats that we know from Joan Rivers, Jerry Seinfeld, Milton Berle, you name it, they cut their teeth up in the Catskills. And this museum and the festival is sort of dedicated to this fairly overlooked and poorly understood era, and sort of what it means about, or what it says about American humor and comedy, because at the end of the day, a lot of what we do is about comedy.
And speaking of comedy, you are honoring a big name comedian, Robert Klein. What does that mean for the festival and the community at large, I guess?
Well, I mean, I think for us, it's a big coup. Robert Klein, he, you know, he also kind of came up in the Catskills. He was a waiter and a comedian and really kind of the last of that generation. Robert is also going to be on Jimmy Fallon tonight talking about the festival, which is a big coup for us. Basically we're showing a film about his life and then an awards ceremony with Josh Gondelman. It's a fun time. So, yeah, please check out the lineup at BorschtBeltFest.org.
And Josh Gondelman, you mentioned one of the names there. There's also writers from SNL and The Tonight Show. What does that say about the lasting influence of Borscht Belt humor?
Well, the way we see it is, you know, sitcoms, films, all the television, especially that we know and love, really came out of the Catskills, because in the 50s, in the 60s, as television blew up, all those writers and comedians, were needed in Hollywood, and many, many of them moved to California and sort of built up this whole industry, the sitcom industry, and that humor is very much Borscht Belt humor, as we say, and the legacy is continues.
And the festival kicks off Friday with a Friday night schmooze of comedy and cocktails. Tell us a little bit about that and who's going to be there.
So that's a very democratic open mic event at Tony and Nick's in downtown Ellenville. Anyone who signs up can get a 5-minute slot. So it's a real fun mix of some accomplished comedians drop by and do 5 minutes. And then anyone, any kind of shtick you got, just sign up at events@borschtbeltmuseum.org and we'll hook you up.
And we're talking a lot about comedy, and we'll get to some of the other stuff in the lineup, but I wanted to also highlight the Borscht Belt talk on Saturday about blue comedy, when comics cross the line. Audiences back then sort of gasped, I guess. Why focus on the blue part of it?
Well, blue refers to sort of, quote, dirty, filthy, illegal. At the time there were censorship laws in place, and Lenny Bruce, the comedian of the day, was arrested more than once for violating those things. You couldn't stay on stage. Joan Rivers, Buddy Hackett, a lot of these comedians were really sort of renegades and enjoyed sort of going up to the line, sometimes stepping over it. And you could be arrested and put in jail for making certain kinds of jokes. So that's with a comedy historian, Lenny Dave, really interesting, entertaining presentation he gives. We have many, many talks going on this weekend.
And a comedy show and panel featuring Jewish women comics who smashed barriers. It also features a short play, You Can't Teach a Fish to Whistle.
Yeah, that's one. Joey Novick, who's organizing all our panels, that's a play he wrote. And that's going to be a reading of this play, followed by all the actors that are also sort of comedians, and they'll do a little shtick after the reading. So it's sort of a two-for-one kind of event.
And there's also going to be the Borscht Belt Oral History Project. We've talked about this before. Talk a little bit more about the oral history interviews that folks can be a part of.
Yeah, so that's a big part of what we do. We have about over 120 oral histories, people who, lived that era, either worked or were guests. And we also, we have something called the Borscht Belt Story Hour. So you can sign up for an oral history appointment. We also have something called the Borscht Belt Story Hour, which is like a story slam. And there you also get a few minutes to stand up and tell a story. It's under 5 minutes with no notes. And we also have something called the Chotchka Road Show. If you have a little item that you have from a hotel or something from the Catskills and back in the day and a story behind it, you come by, drop off, you give us the tchotchke, the item, and tell a story, and we film it. We have filmmaker there during that. It's a little, we call it the Barter Boat. It's a trailer that's sort of gussied up. So we have lots of events that really try to get these histories, you know, recorded for posterity.
And that's sort of like your antiques roadshow.
It's an antiques roadshow, exactly.
Let's talk about Sunday, which is a big street fair. What can people expect on Sunday walking down Canal Street in Ellenville?
Yeah, so we're basically taking over Ellenville. We have over 80 vendors. We have the Manischewitz trailer. We have Amazing Mike's, another food truck. We have a bunch of food trucks. We have about 40 food vendors, really everything. I mean, there is definitely a focus on sort of Jewish related food, but there really is something for everyone, and then all kinds of kind of crafts. And we have a children's tent, children's activity tent for parents who don't want to schlep their kids around. It's basically a big street fair of live music. We have Simon Says competition, arugula bake off.
I was gonna say there's a bake off.
Yeah, well, last year we had a babka bake off. This year we switched it up. Arugula bake off contest, some fierce competition. We already have 12 entries. It's everything is about fun, you know. It's all about joy, and nothing gets taken seriously. It's really just a good time.
Well, talking about joy, and maybe not too seriously, we can't leave the conversation without mentioning the Jewish dating game Saturday. Tell us about that.
Yes. Sign on up. So Jewish Dating Game is really kind of a game show, comedy show wrapped into one with a matchmaker. Linnea Sage, she does this amazing show in the city, and she's bringing it up to the Catskills. And anyone can enter, go to the website, you can look for it there. And it's basically, you know, it's a mashup, and it's a lot of fun. So, you know, and if you're single or not single, you can join in, and please sign up for that.
As it says on the website at borschtbeltfest.org, not your mother's dating game. So
yeah, it's pretty wild, I would say.
How does the festival support the mission of the Borscht Belt Museum year round? This has got to be one of the biggest things that you guys put on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we raised substantial funds to keep the museum open, but I think it's also our way of kind of bringing this story into a contemporary culture. You know, it's not dead. We're not celebrating a dead culture, very much alive and always evolving. And so we like to showcase young performers, up and coming talent, just showing the continuity of this culture and this legacy.
And I was there last year. We'll be there again this year. And I was just remarking about the not only the people that came from the area, but people that came in that used to come up to the Borscht Belt when they were kids or, you know, with their families. And it's just sort of like a visit back to the past for them.
It's kind of a giant reunion. Yeah, people come from all over the country. We were amazed. I mean, we did this on a lark the first year, 3 years ago. And it was so successful that we decided to keep it going and expand it. We got a grant this year from the UGA Federation to professionalize it. We actually have professionals working on this and not just all volunteers. It's about also cultivating new audience, younger audiences. So yeah, come one, come all.
And there's so much more there. Again, borschtbeltfest.org. Is there something you're personally excited about in this year's unique lineup?
I would say the Simon Says competition. I lose every year, but I do have aspirations to win one day. $10,000 prize.
All right. The Borscht Belt Fest is this weekend in Ellenville. It's comedy and culture and cuisine. Again, more information at borschtbeltfest.org. We've been talking to Andrew Jacobs of the Borscht Belt Museum about the big weekend. We'll see you there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ken.
All right. And we should note that Borscht Belt Fest is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Afro-Dominican writer Alejandro Heredia on his debut novel, Loca. We'll also hear Eve Ewing talk about her new book, Original Sins, The Miseducation of Black and Native Children and the Construction of American Racism. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Izar. Listener support is what keeps Radio Catskill running. It's your donations that keep us on the air and fund the staff and programming that bring local news, culture, and NPR to the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania, and beyond. But did you know your support also helps all of our news partners? Here's Philip Antuso from the Times Union Hudson Valley.
I've been coming on Local Edition for years now, and it's a way to get Hudson Valley stories and state stories out to a Catskill listening audience. And that obviously redounds to our benefit. And, you know, you guys have provided reporting that we've shared. The relationship that the Times Union has with Radio Catskill has just made me more aware of what's going on and brought more things onto my radar.
And here's Liam Mayo from The River Reporter.
It's incredibly helpful to be able to find a wider audience for our reporting. It's incredibly helpful to be able to talk about these stories over the air in ways that we don't, you know, get to in the printed versions of the newspaper. But it's also just really important, I think, to have colleagues in the community. Like, any one organization can only cover so much, and having Radio Catskill healthy, having Radio Catskill like fully supported by the community is really more important now than ever.
Your donation powers the news, music, and community voices you count on every day. Help keep Radio Catskill strong. Donate now at wjffradio.org. That's wjffradio.org.
And we've been telling you about that because while we met our summer fund drive goal, we were also informed on Friday that the federal funding that we had counted on for the fourth quarter of this year has been pulled. We've been defunded, but we're not defeated. So your financial support is essential to keep our vital public service going in our community and fill that gap. You can donate at wjffradio.org. We face a budget shortfall of about $170,000. That's nearly 25% of our annual income. And again, those funds were previously appropriated and approved by the GOP-led Congress in a bipartisan bill. We are preparing for that, but we need your help to get to fill that gap that is now upon us. Support us at wjffradio.org and ensure the future of public radio in our community. And also, we're asking for your feedback. We're asking for you to participate in the 2025 Community Survey, especially in this time when we've lost our federal funding. Your voices matter more than ever as well. You're the public in public radio, so share your thoughts and help protect and shape our community resource. It only takes about 5 to 7 minutes. You can find it at wjffradio.org on the right-hand side there. And after completing the survey, you'll have the opportunity to enter for a chance to win gift cards from One Gram Books, tickets to Shadowland Stages shows this season, spa day for two at Hemlock Neversink Spa, or a pair of tickets to a concert of your choice at Bethelwood Center for the Arts. Again, that is our 2025 Community Survey at wjffradio.org. Please show your support in that way as well by giving us your feedback. It's more vital than ever. Today's forecast, partly cloudy with a high of 77, 59 for a low, and partly cloudy tonight. Humidity heating up or coming back into the system and heating up tomorrow, 84 for a high, intervals of clouds and sunshine, 65 for a low, and then some thunderstorms in the forecast Friday, likely in the afternoon. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. On Point is coming up next.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Afro-Dominican writer Alejandro Heredia on his debut novel, Loca. We'll also hear Eve Ewing talk about her new book, Original Sins, The Miseducation of Black and Native Children and the Construction of American Racism. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.